and appreciate his love for the Lord. He has chosen to speak on the subject, anger.
Sit down.
Thank you, Brother Richard. Certainly has been a blessing for me to enjoy the fellowship of this convention as well as the words propounded. Have you ever wondered or pondered the words of the Apostle Paul that are found in Ephesians 4 and verse 26? Be ye angry and sin not. Let not the sun go down on your wrath. Most of us have been taught that to get angry is against Christian principles. It's not something that we should be doing. Yet, we have these words of the apostle that seems to be telling us that it is okay to be angry as long as we don't sin. We would like to pursue this with you this afternoon so that we can have a better understanding of this particular emotion that I think we all have and we all experience from time to time. If all anger then were sin, Paul would never have told us to be angry. So it is then logical to say that all anger cannot be sin. When something is done that provokes anger in us, we experience some of the following within ourselves. The initial feelings that the body experiences is an involuntary response to something that stimulated our emotional and biochemical defense system, which we all possess because we are all human beings. This is termed to be the human's flight or fight mechanism, which prepares the body for some form of action. Adrenaline is pumped into the bloodstream. Muscles are supplied with a sudden burst of energy. The blood pressure rises as the heart beats a little faster. And thus far, all of this is still involuntary, so it cannot yet be termed sin. It still falls into the first part of the Apostle Paul's admonition to be angry, but sin not. It is at this point that we can choose how we will react to the feelings that are generated by the experience. It is not the feeling, but how we react to the feeling that is either good or bad. No one can make us angry. It is something that we can choose to allow to happen to us. Our response to the feelings that we have is strictly our choice and our responsibility. We might say anger is an inescapable part of life. It is a legitimate emotion of man. We can choose in return to lash out at the one who causes us these feelings, or we can choose to weigh the situations more intelligently by further examining it and our feelings towards it. The boundary that separates normal anger and sinful anger is the point where we consciously decide to wish or to do harm to the other party, either verbally or physically. We can also know that we have crossed the border into sin when we continually replay the incident over and over again in our minds, looking for some way to get even or some way that would make them sorry that they ever did this to us. If we feel any resentment or bitterness or hatred towards the other person, then we can be sure that we have crossed into sin's territory. What the Apostle Paul was then telling us when he says, do not, was this, do not let your natural feelings of anger turn into sin, and do not let the sun go down while you are still angry. In other words, do not let much time go by without taking some positive action towards resolving these feelings that you have of anger. The psalmist may have been the one that prompted the apostle to tell us about this important aspect of our humanity. In Psalms 4:4, it states, in your anger, do not sin. When you are on your bed, search your hearts and be silent. Someone wisely said that anger is only one letter short of the word danger. The only area that it is safe to express anger is towards the sin itself, but never towards the sinner. Let us now, for a few minutes, consider some ways that uncontrolled anger has been described. We will list a few. To launch into anger is like putting your boat out to sea in a tumultuous storm. Anger blows out the light of reason from one's mind. Anger is momentary madness that takes over and suppresses all reason and common sense. Most angry people open their mouths, shut their eyes, and stop their ears. Violence in the voice is often the death rattle of reason. Anger is often like a stone that is thrown into a wasp's nest. Anyone who lets his temper over will always find himself in hot water. Impetuous anger manages everything and everyone that it touches very badly. It is often the case that when a man is wrong and won't admit it, the only defense left to him is anger. There is nothing in nature so deforming to man as a display on an angry face. The intoxication of anger, like that of liquor, shows us to others, but it hides us from ourselves. A man makes his inferiors his superiors by his anger. The results of acts motivated by way of anger are then seen to be, on a whole, of no personal benefit. And the reason for that is that they are negatively based upon only emotions. In fact, the fire that anger kindles usually burns the one who is angry more so than the one to whom anger is directed. These are but a few descriptions that have sort of put before you the unprofitability of uncontrolled anger. But let us now look into the account that we find in the scriptures, and we have in many cases some very good lessons that we can find. And one of them is in the book of Jonah, chapter 3, verse 10, and also chapter 4 and verse 1. These verses read as follow. And God saw their works, that they turned from their evil way and repented of the evil. Then he said, that he said that he would do unto them, and he did it not. But it displeased Jonah exceedingly, and he was very angry. You remember the account of how that Jonah was told by the Lord to tell the people in Nineveh that they would be destroyed because of their wickedness. Jonah didn't like to give this message to the inhabitants. The first time, he sought to evade the responsibility, and he fled into a ship. A storm arose, and he was cast into the sea, swallowed up by a great fish, which vomited him up on the shore after 3 days. Now as time passes, and he gives the Lord's judgment to the people, these people were so repentive, and they did it with such fervor, that God had mercy on them, and he withdrew his punishment. This reminds us of the words found in Psalms 103 and verse 8. The Lord is merciful and gracious, slow to anger, and plenteous in mercy. Apparently, God was pleased with them. But how contrary was Jonah's reaction to God's mercy towards them? The account says that it displeased him exceedingly, and that he was very angry. What was Jonah's problem? Jonah was all wrapped up in himself. He was worried about his credibility instead of rejoicing that the people were spared and weren't destroyed. In fact, he was so very angry that he set common sense aside altogether. And in verse 3, he asked the Lord to take his life, saying it is better for him to die than to live. Yes, we might say that anger had blown out the light of reason in Jonah's mind. Is it possible, brethren, that we have been displeased when someone didn't get what we thought they deserved? Is it possible that we might have had undertones of anger towards God for not punishing such wickedness that we have seen in someone's life? Is it possible that we could have kicked against the pricks of God's mercy towards others because we think the scriptures call for just retribution and some sort of stripes must be paid? Is it possible that we might have set ourselves up on a self-made altar and are looking down, as did the Pharisee, upon the publican, and no longer see our own sins and shortcomings, but only those of others? Another lesson comes to our mind along this line, and that is the lesson found with Jonah and Joseph and his brethren. In the 37th chapter of Genesis, verse 3 and 4, we read, "Now Israel loved Joseph more than all his children, because he was the son of his old age, and he made him a coat of many colors. And when his brethren saw that their father loved him more than all his brethren, they hated him and could not speak peaceably unto him." They were already angry and hated him because he had told his father about something that they had done previously. And this, as the account shows us, but added more fuel to the fire of their wrath. In verses 5 through 7, it tells how that Joseph had a dream of how everybody would bow down unto him, which he told very readily and very naively, we think, to his brethren, who the account then says hated him yet the more. Verse 8 says, "They hated him yet the more for his dreams and for his words." More fuel then was added to the fire. Joseph had yet another dream, somewhat similar to this first, which he told to his father and to his brethren, which apparently irritated even his father. We read in verse 11 that his brethren envied him. Cannot we not see then that thus far the wisdom of the Apostle Paul's words, that we should not let the sun go down upon our wrath. If we do, it will continue to grow, and it will continue to intensify as it did with Joseph's brethren, adding more fire to the fuel with each experience. We read in Proverbs 27 and verse 4, wrath is cruel, anger is outrageous. This well expresses the point to which Joseph's brethren had let their hatred and their anger for Joseph build up. Inside them, their feelings were so intensely filled with anger that it was like a time bomb that had to eventually explode. This bomb goes off when he comes to give them something that their father had sent to them. In verses 18 to 21, we read, and when they saw him afar off, even before he came near them, they conspired against him to slay him. And they said one to another, behold, the dreamer cometh. Come now, therefore, and let us slay him, and cast him into some pit. And we will say, some evil beast has devoured him, and we shall see what will become of his dreams. Is it possible that we have let the same thing happen to us sometime in the past? Could not a similar thing happen to us in the future if we are not on guard against it? Have we ever found it hard to speak peaceably to someone whom we disliked and who always seemed to rub us the wrong way? Have you ever wondered why we have such feelings? Have we ever let anger build up inside of us and had it express itself in impatience, irritability, harsh, cutting words, backbiting, and evil speaking as well? These are but signs or symptoms of hidden anger. Is it possible that subconsciously we might envy someone their position and are always looking for their faults rather than seeing any good in them? Have we ever had the urge to bring someone down because we thought that they were too high and mighty in their own eyes, instead of praying for their welfare? These are all questions, brethren, that we must answer for ourselves. Let us now look to Jesus and the Pharisees. Envy, anger, and hatred are close relatives. They usually live in the same house. We have the accumulated feelings of these things summed up for us in Matthew 26, verses 3 and 4. Then assembled together the chief priests and the scribes and the elders of the people unto the palace of the high priest, who was called Caiaphas. And they consulted that they might take Jesus by subtlety and kill him. Their envy was so great that eventually they saw good as being evil and sought to justify their feelings by invoking the traditions of men that had become so much a part of their beliefs and their religion. They hated Jesus so much that they looked only to entrap him in some mistake that they hoped that he would make. They loved the prominence and the prestige of their positions, and they were fearful of losing it. When Jesus was around, the people were more interested in him than they were in them. They wanted to hear what he would say, and they wanted to be with him. All of these feelings of envy, anger, and hatred continued to build up in them until they would only be satisfied with Jesus being crucified on the cross. Is it possible, brethren, that we might have similar feelings when we feel threatened by someone who might replace us in some task or position that we like and to which we have become accustomed? Is it possible that our feelings are not right when others might somehow desire to be with others instead of being with us as they had done in the past? Is it possible that we might feel strong resentment towards the one who had replaced us in that situation? What could they possibly have to offer that is any better than we have, might be our thought. Is it possible that we could look for opportunities to undermine that relationship so that we could have ours returned to what it previously was? Would we be happy to see friction come into that relationship so that it might come to an end, so that we might again be the main focus of the attention? It might be very interesting to evaluate our thoughts and our motives and see if any of the above would be in any way attached to us. Or would we be happy to share with others to the point of encouraging and supporting the relationship that may have left us out of some of the activities? The latter, if that be our choice, would demand much of self be removed from the picture, and the welfare and the happiness of others be put first. Not always a very easy choice for us to make, but one with which we think the Lord would be very pleased. We read in Proverbs 25, 23, and 24, I think one that Brother Ray mentioned earlier, "The north wind driveth away rain, so doth an angry countenance, a backbiting tongue. It is better to dwell in the corner of a housetop than with a brawling woman in a wide house." Have you ever wondered why the Lord saw fit to have this statement as part of his holy word? There is no doubt that something had gone very wrong in the relationship between the two that dwell in this household. There is a bitterness and an anger openly expressed in the words brawling. In fact, it describes anger that has gotten totally out of control. An angry countenance reminds us of the threatening dark clouds that appear that always precede the wrath of nature, expressed in the form of thunder and lightning. A backbiting tongue is one that is ever set to do harm to the one that is unfortunate enough to be its target. We ask, how can this condition ever come to be? There is probably some fault on both sides. It is a rare thing when only one party is solely the cause. What we see is again the accumulative destructive force that comes from unresolved problems. Apparently, the sun had set on the wrath of the woman many times without it having been handled and disposed of in a proper way. Positive communication apparently was totally missing in their lives. If there at one time was love and caring in this home, it had been replaced by anger and by resentment. Forgiveness on the part of the woman certainly has not been a part of her consideration in coping with the problems of that household. Her relationship is not only in serious trouble with her husband, but with her God as well. She has placed herself in a position in which God cannot forgive her her sins because she is unwilling to forgive others. This is very clearly stated to us by Jesus himself in Matthew 6:15. But if ye forgive not men their trespasses, neither will your Father forgive you your trespasses. There are absolutely no exceptions. You must forgive before you can be forgiven. Is it possible that we may hold some resentment towards someone and feel quite justified in doing so? Is it possible that we just can't get rid from ourselves of some harsh feelings towards others, which we feel have done some wrong unto us? Is it possible that we do not even want to consider reconciliation with someone for what has happened between us? Is it possible that because of how we feel about someone, we will have nothing to do with them? Is it possible that because we were not taken in the way that we should have been taken many times, that we now feel that it is worthless to continue on trying anymore? If we are able to answer yes to any of these questions, brethren, then we have set up a barrier between the Lord and ourselves, and not only the person towards which we have the problem. Reconciliation is one of the prerequisites that must be met in order that our sacrifice be acceptable to our Heavenly Father. In Matthew 5:22, we read Jesus' words, "But I say unto you, that whosoever is angry with his brother shall be in danger of the judgment." In verses 23 and 24, Jesus continues, "Therefore, if thou bring thy gift before the altar, and thou rememberest that thy brother has aught against thee, leave thy gift before the altar, and go thy way. First be reconciled to thy brother, and then come and offer thy gift." We all have the responsibility to attempt to make things right, even if it isn't our fault. We need to try to help the other party to get rid of any hostility that they might be feeling towards us, not particularly for our own sake, but mainly for their well-being. If we make the attempt and it is refused, then we have done what we could, and now we can return to offer our gift on the altar of sacrifice because now we have met the prerequisites and now it is acceptable. But we shouldn't just quit after the one effort, but continue to try to make peace and to bring reconciliation. On the other hand, if we are the party who refuses to be reconciled, then we have left ourselves in a condition of heart and mind that makes it impossible for us to have our sacrifice accepted by God. This can be true in a domestic setting, as well as in any setting where there is something wrong between two parties. It is important that we give serious thought and see if we may still have some problems that we might have need to remedy, lest we find ourselves in a position of attempting to offer unacceptable sacrifices. Sometimes this will take a lot of effort on our part, but it is a must. As Ephesians 4, 31 and 32 tells us, let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice, and be ye kind to one another, tender-hearted, forgiving one another, even as God, for Christ's sake, has forgiven you. Yes, brethren, this we must do. It is a part of our overcoming. Let us now consider the incident that occurred between Naaman and Elisha the prophet. We read of that in 2 Kings, the 5th chapter. Naaman was a great captain in the Syrian army, a man of integrity, of honorable demeanor, but he contracted leprosy. He was told that Elisha might be able to cure him of this dreaded disease. When he came to Elisha's house, the prophet didn't even come out to talk with him, but merely sent out his servant to tell him what he should do if he wanted to be cured. This wasn't the sort of greeting that he expected or that he was used to as a man highly looked up to by most of the people. Having to wash 7 times in the dirty water of Jordan wasn't what he expected either as a method of cure. This seeming insult to his person and to his position invoked anger in Naaman. We read in verse 11 his reactions. But Naaman was wroth and went away and said, behold, I thought he surely would come out to me and stand and call upon the name of the Lord, his God, and strike his hand over the place and recover the leper. If his men hadn't interceded and calmed him down, he would have in his anger gone away still with his leprosy. Is it possible that we sometimes react as did Naaman when someone treats us discourteously? Is it possible that our pride is sometimes hurt when we are slighted? Is it possible at times that we feel that to do what is asked of us is below our position, is below our dignity? And are we angered by the requester as well as by the request itself? Is it possible that when our humility is being tested, we still have some resentment towards the individual that the Lord has used to test us? Letting off steam has been one of the ways that psychologists recommend to handle anger in our day. This method is only all right if it is done without malice or without the intent to hurt the other person. But if the anger is handled tactlessly and without any regard for what might be said, then it may cause an even deeper problem than originally was there. Someone has wittily said, people are not water kettles, and letting off steam in an uncontrolled fashion usually makes the atmosphere more hot and humid. This type of reaction but stimulates more hostility and anxiety. Because it is negative and opens the door for further aggressiveness on our part, if the other person strikes back, then it is unprofitable. Again, the best way to handle a disagreement or anything that might be a cause to have become angry is to calmly address the problem with the other person and not attack them in a personal way, but to really zero in on the problem itself. If we can do this, then we are constructively handling our anger as well as the problem at hand. If we are doing this, we are being angry, but we are not sinning. Let us remember that we are to control anger and thus not sin. But also, if we are not careful, anger then can take control of us, and it will cause us to sin. How quick we get angry is a good measure of our patience. Proverbs 16:32 tells us, "He that is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he that ruleth his spirit than he that taketh the city." Proverbs 15:1 says, "A soft answer turneth away wrath, but grievous words stir up anger." Let us, brethren, always remember this. We are in bondage to anyone to the extent that we permit ourselves to be aroused to anger or resentment by their words or by their deeds. Some more simple questions that we might ask ourselves in reviewing our behavior are, were there signs of impatience in my actions today? Were there any considerations in my mind that would tinge with reciprocating some hurt for some hurt that I have received? Were there any thoughts in my mind towards undermining the efforts of anyone today? Did I assign some contemptuous name or innuendo to someone, even if I did not verbalize it? Do I feel any bitterness towards anyone for their actions towards me? Do I have any misunderstandings or arguments? Did I have any misunderstanding or arguments with someone and have not had the inclination to seek a reconciliation? Have I used sharp words towards someone for no good reason? Do I bear even the slightest resentment towards anyone for something that might have happened between us in the past? It is important, brethren, to realize that we may have suppressed anger so very well that it may no longer appear on the surface of our conscious thinking. It will take some effort on our part to honestly consider our feelings and our actions and to see if there is any sense of the word, any negativisms in there that we might have towards others. What are some of the positive steps that we can take to properly handle our feelings of anger and yet not sin? The best cure is to follow the Apostle Paul's prescription to take immediate action. We should seek to resolve the problem as soon as possible. To be objective, we must keep our focus on the problem and not on the person attached to the problem. In order to rid ourselves of any hard feelings, it will always help to remember that we also have been the instruments of provoking anger in someone else from time to time. After coming to the point of recognizing that we have anger within us, the first step that will be the most influential towards reconciling the problem is to go to the Lord in prayer, asking Him for the wisdom that only His Spirit can give us in order that we might exercise discretion and tact in handling the situation in such a way that He would be pleased with us. Depending on how deep our feelings of anger might be, will determine the intensity of the need of our petitions for His help. The amount of our willingness to let God work in us will be proportionate to our desire to want to make things right. Reconciliation can never be attained without the trait of true forgiveness, which does not come easily to most of us. Even if the other person were at fault, it is essential to our spiritual welfare that we seek to forgive them if we ever hope to rid ourselves of the disease within us of anger. Talking it over with the other party, of course, is a must. This must be done calmly and in such a way as not to be interpreted as an attack on them, but on the problem itself. We must remember that the problem and the person must be kept separated, much like the concept that God loved us while we were still sinners, even though He didn't love the sin. If our chief motive is to seek resolution to our angry feelings, we can and we will be victorious with the Lord's help in regaining the peace of mind and heart that was lost to us because of those feelings. Yes, brethren, anger can be a very subtle thing, even so as to be hidden in our subconscious minds, unknown to us. May our prayer then be like the one that David spoke, that we find recorded in Psalms 139, 23 and 24. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my thoughts, and see if there be any wicked way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. Let us see to it that the sin that comes by way of anger, brethren, does not keep us out of the kingdom. May the Lord guide you with His Spirit, that you and me, that we will always act in the way that would be pleasing to Him, not only in our words, but in our actions and in our thoughts. May the Lord bless each of you as you seek to be more like your Lord Jesus and be conformed to His image.
For those exhortations and warnings concerning anger. Incidentally, brethren, we have here the address of our dear brother George Aldrich. For those who may want it, it's 44 South Winter Park Drive, Castleberry, Florida, 32707. I'll leave it over here, and those who want to copy it and correspond with him or send him a card may do so. Well, all good things must come to an end, and here we are at the end of the annual convention of the New Haven Bible Students. And we want to thank all the brethren for coming. And we hope that you have been refreshed spiritually as you listen to the word of the Lord being given by His servants. Also, we want you to remember to send special love and greetings from this convention to all the brethren who were not able to attend. You are all invited to have supper with us tonight. The sisters have a display of goodies there, meatball sandwiches, coffee, tea. We have some fruit and some cake and desserts, mostly homemade. So please stay and have some temporal food before you leave for home. So hymn 44, you will rise on the last verse, and Brother Al will dismiss this convention with the Lord's blessing and ask the blessing also on the food, and then we will remain standing and sing one verse of hymn 64. Number 44.
Gracious Father, we humbly bow in thy presence, thanking thee, dear Father, for thy word and for the opportunity to have been together in convention to have considered thy word. May we, dear Father, realize more and more the need, the great need that we have of thy Spirit, that it might guide us in all that we say and do, in the way that we conduct ourselves, so that we might